to listeners just like you. It's 10 a.m. Coming up next is Ecologic. Stay tuned.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It'd be paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on prolonging the earth and telling where we gonna plant our seed,
solar power, ever see a windmill go? Feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for Wednesday, August 30th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today, our guests are activist Zakiya Alake and Ted Glick from Radical Elders, bringing optimism and solutions. We'll also be talking about the right to repair, a whistleblower from the Pilgrim Nuclear Reactor, and an update on the Save the Hudson bill.
We try to open every show with good news. Corporations have been manipulating people for years to convince you to buy brand new things instead of repairing what you have. The right to repair keeps plastic out of the ocean, working equipment out of landfills, and extends the life of expensive items, cutting the annual cost of owning a car, tractor, and more. In a letter to Rob LaRue, president of the National Farmers Union, clarifying the legality of right to repair, EPA Administrator Michael Regan wrote, "Crucially, the Clean Air Act makes no distinction between repair by manufacturer versus another party. Actions that qualify as repair or replacement are allowed under the Clean Air Act, regardless of who makes them. Moreover, nothing in the Clean Air Act or the EPA's regulations limits the manufacturer's ability to provide service tools and information to consumers and independent repair facilities for the purpose of repairing their equipment."
In other right-to-repair news, 404media.co reports this victory in California because of some limitations in the bill. Apple has dropped its opposition and is now endorsing a state bill that would require manufacturers to give independent repair shops and individual consumers access to the same parts and documentation that they use in-house. Apple had been one of the last big tech companies to acknowledge that things are changing, that customers are demanding the right to repair their expensive devices. Their letter says in part, "We support SB 244 because it includes requirements that protect individual users' safety and security, as well as project manufacturers' intellectual property. We will continue to support the bill so long as it continues to provide protections for customers' innovations." A commentator on the article points out that most manufacturers today only swap out major expensive parts. Access to individual board components and documentation are the things truly needed if device owners are to stand a chance at having reasonably priced and successful repair experiences. Apple is supporting the bill because it means more sales of $1,400 logic boards and subscription revenues for their online diagnostic software. 404 Media reminds us that we're still not done. Agricultural giants like John Deere and medical equipment manufacturers still hold great power to prevent consumers and independent repair shops from fixing equipment. We'll do a full show on this right to repair in the near future.
An August 21st, 2023 letter from a Holtec worker at the Pilgrim Reactor in Plymouth, Massachusetts, currently being decommissioned, says in part, "I am writing this letter to inform you of a breach of trust regarding the promise made by Pilgrim Station Management to not discharge 1 million gallons of contaminated water. The staff were directed to install evaporators and boil away the water volume. The heating elements raise the temperature of the contaminated water to approximately 117 degrees Fahrenheit. The evaporated water is then discharged, quote, as an airborne release to the environment." Oh, no.
The Boston Globe reports that Holtec spokesman Patrick O'Brien says that the water vapor is measured weekly to ensure compliance with federal safety limits. But NRC spokesperson Neil Sheehan said that the NRC does not know how much water was evaporated. What are they measuring? The likelihood of breathing radioactive water vapor is too great a risk.
Last week, right after our show, there was a press conference by the Stop Holtec Coalition. They are pleased with Governor Hochul's signature, but are continuing to meet with state agencies to ensure that enforcement is done in such a way that loopholes are plugged. We'll stay tuned for updates and keep you informed.
And now we welcome our guests. Please introduce yourself, Zakiya.
Good morning. I'm Zakiya Alake. I'm here as a radical elder. I'm a member of our coordinating team, and I live and breathe in Boston, Massachusetts.
And I'm Ted Glick. I am also part of the coordination team of radical elders with Zakiya and others. I'm also active with Beyond Extreme Energy and 350 New Jersey Rockland.
Okay. So there's a march to end fossil fuels on September 17th. Why? Ted, let's start with you.
Okay. The a major reason is because the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonin Guterres, a number of months ago announced that he was organizing a climate ambition summit at the UN for the purpose of getting particularly the industrialized countries like the United States in particular to up their commitments in terms of taking action on the climate crisis. And specifically, and this was very important, what they are going to be doing to get off fossil fuels. He identified fossil fuels essentially as the enemy. And he has so far stuck to a strong stance on how countries will not be able to attend this climate ambition summit unless they come with real stepping up action in terms of policy to get off fossil fuels. So around that, that initiative on his part, which we commend, there's been a major mobilization. There's now over 500 organizations that have endorsed this. A big demonstration on Sunday, September 17th, 1 o'clock p.m., gathering on Broadway at 56th Street and marching over to the United Nations for a rally on that day. Those are some of the basics.
And now this march is not just for complaining about climate chaos, but for affecting policy. Now, how is that going to happen? Zakiya?
How is that going to happen? I think I have a real community focused picture of it. Ted probably has a larger picture of it because he's really, really involved with it. But I will say that getting together with different groups. I'm actually riding on the bus to New York with the 350 contingent, Ted. But I'm marching with us. I really want to reach out to the 350 members and let them know about Radical Elders, show them our mini program, get more information about what they're doing here. I did sign up for the 350 chapter, for example, in Boston. And to look at the policies that we could promote here on the ground in Massachusetts and in people's homes. that's what I think is important about this, that it gives us the opportunity to break what might look like really big, distant policy ideas down into manageable bites that regular, ordinary folks can grasp and promote.
Yeah, I think that a mobilization like this can be helpful to what Zakiya is talking about, because, you know, when you see tens of thousands of people taking action together, mm-hmm. and actually also taking action over an extended period of time, there's activities that are starting on September 12th. Yeah. With nonviolent direct action at corporate and bank targets in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And then after September 17th, there's a major action being planned at Wall Street on September 18th. So when people see this and it gets news coverage, it helps to encourage people, give them some hope that things are changing. And that can be helpful. Just that alone is actually an important thing. Unless people have hope that they can bring about change, it's very difficult for change to happen. So I think that this mobilization can be very helpful from that standpoint.
I have a little button that says activism is the antidote to despair. And yep. Mm,
so true. Yeah. And that's what Ecologica is all about, is bringing a hope and optimism. And that's what we try to show people, that it's not all bad news. Sometimes bad news has things you can do. We always talk about marches, rallies, petitions, and you're bringing our listeners hope and solutions. So thank you.
Thank you for having us. The idea that I can meet Ted and some other activists that I've been working with for like, what, 18 months? We have a beautiful t-shirt we'll be debuting that was made in an environmentally friendly way, I pray. I'm assured of that. We're assured of that. With our logo and we'll be marching, but thanks to Ted's work, we'll be marching behind a contingent of families and children, right, Ted?
That's right. Yeah. Climate Family, New York Climate Families. They're going to be meeting at 54th Street and Broadway. We're going to be meeting with them, so that we are making a connection between the young and the elders, the young and the old. I was on a call just 2 days ago, actually, of representatives of many of the endorsing groups and the organizing hubs for this action. And there was a young woman, I believe she was 16 years old, a high school student, with Fridays for Future, which is a major part of this mobilization. Mm-hmm. There are actually 40 high schools in New York City where organizing is happening to bring young people to this big mobilization on September 17th. There's actually 150 organizing hubs that have been put together to organize for this action. And the young woman whose name
What's
I just...
What's a hub?
A hub is essentially a grouping that comes together on the basis of being already being an organization, or on the basis of an issue or some kind of affinity. So that's what an organizing hub is in the context of this action. So this young woman she talked about how from her experience, there have been efforts that have been organized basically primarily by young people. And there have been actions organized primarily by older people. And one of the things that she really appreciates about this mobilization is that it really is youth and older people working together in a relatively harmonious, cooperative way. Doesn't always happen in coalitions. Sometimes coalitions are really rough. They're really difficult. And it's not like there aren't conflicts and disagreements. There always are. But so far, this mobilization has been overwhelmingly positive in terms of the way it's worked for people who are part of it.
I know that there's a nuclear-free, carbon-free hub organizing, and the elders hub is more than just radical elders. It's got Raging Grannies and who all else?
Third Act, mm-hmm. Elders Climate Action, and a group, 1,000 Grandmothers for Future Generations. Those are the groups part of the elders hub with radical elders.
Great.
It's You know, endfossilfuels.us is the website that the basic website. Well, we'll go into more on that later in the show. But Ted, you had mentioned to us previously that the women's movement and the LGBT movement are helping groups work together. Could you explain how that's going on?
Well, that kind of more generally, I think that's true for the movement as a whole. I mean, that, you know, with many of us who've been doing this for a long time have had many experiences with destructive behavior, whether it be racism, whether it be sexism, whether it be heterosexism, homophobia, ageism. Those are real things. Patriarchy in particular has really deep roots going back thousands and thousands of years. I definitely have seen and have experienced in recent years, in terms of my activism in the movement, the role that strong women have played in really demanding in a positive way that there be a way of talking together and working together and communicating that's much more cooperative, that's not all individualistic, competitive, macho, et cetera. Zakiya, in particular, in the context of Radical Elders, has been playing an important role in terms of helping us to deal with issues of racism and white supremacy that are everywhere, and we're working at them. That's one of the things that we have commitment to, and Zakiya has played a really important role in that work for us. So again, I see within this overall coalition a lot of those aspects in terms of the way the organizing is happening. I'm not at the center of it. I'm not on the coordinating council with the various about a dozen groups that make that up, but I experience it in the calls and in my interactions. And that's very positive. We're not going to bring about change in this society and in this world if we can't work together in a way that's healthy as we can make it.
And really, we should say that everybody's contribution is, as a leader, a good thing we brought from the Occupy movement is that it's leaderless. And the fact is that
leaderful.
and right, but it's a leaderless movement, and that so that we can have a lot of leaders. And Ted, you are definitely a leader in your sphere. And each one of us is. So it's important that you bring in. You might be one of the main organizers, but you're the organizer of your group. And we love you guys.
And well, this march has an emphasis on environmental justice.
Yes.
And indigenous emphasis too. And two groups that the corporate polluters have been targeting for pollution, figuring, well, nobody will care about them. And well, those polluters are wrong. We do care about them, and they've got a leadership position now.
You know, I'm glad that we're talking about what impact is going to have that day and beyond. Mm-hmm. I've just been given an opportunity to be a part of the Movement for Solar Capacity and Leadership, a national effort to bring more what we're saying, people of the global majority, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, into the community-owned solar space. I spoke with you all a little bit about it yesterday in the pre-interview, and it's very exciting. I can see us using some of the footage from this map as we begin our educational efforts here in Greater Boston to actually have community-owned solar, where we're not just saying, look, here's an opportunity for you to lower your energy bills by being a part of a solar farm, but actually taking the money that's saved from that and investing it in things that the community can choose to invest in. So these are heady times, you know.
Choice. That's an important word, I think.
Yes. You know, this I'm remembering the intro that you guys played as the show was starting. And when it mentioned the Pilgrim plant, it trembled a little bit. My dad actually worked at that Pilgrim plant back in the early 70s. He also worked at Yankee Row. My dad died of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Oh, so did many of the men he worked with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember a grad student coming to the house to talk to him. She was trying to do a study about the men, they were men back then, that worked at Yankee Row and Pilgrim. And my dad, a lunch bucket Democrat, did not want to get involved with it. And he was an organizer from the get-go, but he really believed in nuclear power. And I was too young to understand why he swallowed that Kool-Aid. What was it that they did to convince him that there'll be a few deaths, but this will be good for the country eventually? I can't tell you what I was like 16. He died when I was 20. No, I was a little older than that. But he got really ill.
People's impressions, people's opinions sometimes get wrongly influenced by the possibility of their income. Their income. They're a little bit more open. That's why the powers that be like to keep people poor, because they have more. If people are so involved in their survival, they're less likely to be protesting. And we've got to,
See last night, the Iowa Sierra Club ran a film, Atomic Bamboozle. Really interesting about the propaganda and the, how they kind of convince us all that this is a good thing when it's seriously not a good thing.
But bringing that point back to the march, and thank you, Sally, for that. I've raised my sons, and my grandchildren know they can ask me about things that I don't stifle them. They can ask me about the industries I'm involved in. They can ask me about my catering business. They can ask me to walk my talk. But my generation growing up, we couldn't do that. In my home, we couldn't ask Daddy, well, wait a minute, I read Silent Spring. Wait a minute, you're the same guy that let me go to the State House and protest when natural gas prices went up. Can't we talk about, I couldn't do that. You know what I mean? This is very different. So marching with families and children, reinforcing that we're in this together. We're in this together. And taking leadership cross-generationally,
I just wanted to, in terms of what Zakiya talked about, in terms of the community solar, there's four demands for the march.
Yes.
People can check them out at endfossilfuels.us. The third one is declare a climate emergency, to halt fossil fuel exports and investments, and turbocharge the build-out of more just, resilient, distributed energy, community solar, right? Like rooftop and community solar. That is an explicit demand of this demonstration. I want to just step back that up in terms of what Zakiya was talking about.
Thanks, Ted.
Well, excuse us, Zakiya and Ted, as we have to take a short break.
Already?
Something all producers need to do is to raise money to keep WBAI on the air to ensure that the bills get paid and the transmission tower keeps transmitting. We'll be back with Zakiya and Ted real soon.
A listener emailed us about how angry she was that the Oppenheimer movie left out what uranium mining and the Trinity test did to the Diné people of New Mexico. Linda Pence Gunter said on Ecologic that it was a biopic and already 3 hours, but the listener said that someone should make a movie about what uranium mining did to the Diné. Colleen Keane already did, The River That Harms. You can get this hard-to-find movie and support Ecologic and WBAI at the same time for a $40 donation. Call 212-209-2950 or go to ecologic.wbai.org.
Do you remember tuning in to WBAI in October 2019 and finding dead air? It was shocking. A rogue group from Pacifica, WBAI's parent organization, conspired to close WBAI and sell the radio signal. That's our most valuable asset. WBAI supporters, including WBAI Fightback, went to court to get our station back, but that was just the first step. Just as in the environmental movements, the bad guys keep coming back. We must stay vigilant. If you want to see WBAI stay afloat, please see this, feel this, hear this radio station as yours. We all know that money is tight now, and that goes double for nonprofits and all people's media. We rely on our listeners to fill the gap. Your donation is more important than ever. Let's all chip in to keep our station strong. Can you afford to pledge as an ecological buddy for just $15 a month or even $10? We really need your support. Please help to keep us on the air.
Also important is the members' election that started recently. Voting is scheduled from now through September 30th, and we need all our members to participate. If you have donated at least $25 between July 2022 and June 30th, 2023, or volunteered at least 3 hours, you are a voting member. Please watch out for your ballot. It will be as important to saving the station as all the efforts in October 2019. There's voting almost every year, so becoming a member is always a good thing. Please send in your $25. This really is your radio station.
There's no other station like WBAI. We have longer, more in-depth interviews than almost all mainstream programs, like the one you're hearing now. We don't bend to corporate advertisers at BAI or at other Pacifica stations, as our funds come from listeners like you.
We often hear from people who rediscovered BAI. They appreciate our independence and the news, information, and entertainment that is so different from corporate media. We have such a great history and a great future. Help ensure that when you tune in next, we are here for you. Please support us with a donation today to let us know that you are listening. No amount is too small or too big. You can coordinate by mail or call 212-209-2950. Or go to ecologic.wbi.org.
I was at a rally to stop Citibank from investing in fossil fuels and got into a conversation about Ecologic with a young couple. They were glad to know we exist and asked, what radio station? When I told them WBAI, they said, of course, what other radio station would have a show like that? They knew about the uniqueness and breadth of information on BAI. You probably do too. So if you're not a member yet, now's the time. Join us to keep Ecologic on the air.
We support every environmental issue, so a donation to us is like supporting many groups. Ecologic brings you actions you can take. Letters, emails, petitions, rallies, marches, like September 17th, direct actions, concerts, webinars, conferences, lobbying efforts, it's all important. Your donations help us to keep community groups get the word out.
You who listen to WBAI have access to information that your friends and family who don't listen don't have. You hear experts, they don't hear. You have facts, they don't have. You know about events, they don't know about. This is your station, your programming. Be part of it and please show your love by donating in the name of Ecologic. Go to WBAI Archives and listen to an episode of Ecologic that you missed or want to hear again. www.ecoradio.org has a list of last 3 years of Ecologic and direct links to hear them.
If you want, you can send a check or money order directly for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
We hope that you'll check out our many premiums. We're sure you'll find something you want. You can find all our premiums, including The River That Harms, on ecologic.wbai.org. That's ecologic.wbai.org.
This song used to be part of our opening theme because we need to do this every week. Here are the Doobie Brothers, James Taylor, Carly Simon, John Hall, Bonnie Raitt, Chaka Khan, Clarence Clemons, Jackson Brown, Graham Nash, and more, with Taking It to the Streets, urging you to do just that.
Yeah.
That was Taking It to the Streets from the No Nukes concert in 1979, and still needed.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. We're back with Zakiya Alaki and Ted Glick talking about the March to End Fossil Fuels on September 17th. Ted, what's going on with Fridays for Future? What's that all about?
Yeah, I was inspired by the Doobie Brothers there to be sure to raise up the fact that the primary action, of course, is in New York City. Mm-hmm. That's where the Climate Ambition Summit at the United Nations is happening, and that definitely is a big focal point. But there's actually actions all around the world that are happening at the same time. And in particular, Fridays for Future, which grew out of Greta Thunberg's fasting and sitting in at the Swedish parliament, starting back in, I believe it was 2018, every Friday. That has a mushroom, that network. And the last I looked, which was honestly about 2 weeks ago, there were 335 separate actions happening around the world, being organized by Fridays for Future climate strikes, happening either Friday, September 15th, and or the 17th. So there's also other actions that are taking place in other parts of the world in solidarity with the big action here in New York City and with Fridays for Futures actions and so on. So, that is one thing about the climate and the climate justice movement. It's increasingly the climate movement has centered the justice issue. Mm-hmm. And that's true for this march. The leading contingent on September 17th is the environmental justice contingent, the anti-racist contingent. Young people follow that, labor, and then faith-based. Those are the leading contingents, and then there's many more afterwards, and we're kind of in there soon after that ourselves. It is important to explicitly appreciate and to support the young people and the organizing and the leadership that they're giving. From my reading of history, unless you have significant numbers of young people part of your movement, you just aren't going to win. It's just that simple. And that's one of the things about the climate movement internationally, the climate justice movement internationally, that is very important.
And in this country, we just had that great win in Montana for the young people, the court case.
That's right.
Right, to a climate future, yep.
And on the other end of that, one of the members of Radical Elders sent around an article from the L.A. Progressive the other night. Ted, did you get a chance to read it?
Right.
Oh, so it was humorous, but it really made me want to dust off my copy of Radical Lawyers, a book that was written way back in 71 about movement lawyers, because this author, I think his name was Johnny Townsend, was it?
Yeah.
He said, we elders ought to be suing, too. We should take that page from the kids, from the young people, and become plaintiffs. Look into it, he said. So I've been thinking about it a little bit. There's so much on my plate right now, I can't do much about it. But what I can do is use books like this one I shared with you all, the Ecologic Team yesterday, How to Save Our Planet, the facts. That has accessible language for everyday people, but also footnotes to studies to talk about what can we do to get rid of fossil fuels and save the planet. And so much of it we can do right from wherever we live, work, and play. Like reducing the amount of meat that we eat.
Zakiya, you have to mention the author and the name of the book.
Professor Mark Maslin,
Maslin,
he's from across the pond in England, How to Save Our Planet. But this is the kind of book that I can take notes from and use with my family. Like, the most important thing you can do is talk about climate change, he says. Talk about it to everyone. And the greatest challenge in the history of our species should not be a taboo subject.
Yeah, here.
And so here in Boston, we have an organization that I used to be a big part of back in the 90s called ACE, Alternatives for Community and Environment. And they created a program called the Roxbury Environmental Empowerment Project. And I stopped in to see them one day because I was leading a community coalition that was dedicated to health in broadly defined ways. And we had found out that our then mayor, Menino, who we thought was going to be mayor for life, he was mayor for like 16 years. He was going to let one of his big development buddies put an asphalt plant in a neighborhood that is bordered by Roxbury, one of our largest public housing developments, Orchard Park, now Orchard Gardens, and the hospital of Boston City Hospital, which was going through a merger that he pushed through, with Boston University to become Boston Medical Center, and a school that was over the line in South Boston. So this was a very interesting and unique time for Boston, because you had this asphalt plant about to be imposed on a neighborhood that bordered South Boston, the South End, Roxbury, and Dorchester. And we were able to create a coalition with, I must say, some of the people that probably we could find pictures in the Globe of them throwing rocks at little Black children on school buses in the 60s and 70s, but we did it. We did it. And we won.
The march is about coalition building. It's about working for the future. I mean, it makes so much sense to bring any story we have, that we work together. No matter how you think, how different you think two groups are, they're both affected by air and water. Because no matter who, I don't care how conservative or liberal you are, you're breathing air and you need water to survive. And that's what this march is about. Endfossilfuels.us is the website we've been talking about. And let's take your phone calls. Donna?
Okay. While we're waiting for your calls, and the number to call is 212-209-2877. We want to let you know about the last WBAI Candidates Forum coming up this Saturday, September 2nd at 4 to 6 p.m. If you don't have your ballot yet, if you're a member, it will be there soon, and there will be reminders every week until you vote. So please do your part for democratic governance of our listener-supported, locally controlled radio station, and return your ballot on time. Again, the number to call in and speak to our wonderful guests is 212-209-2877.
I'm wondering how many people realize what the term environmental justice means. Yeah, we're bandying it about as if everybody knows, but maybe not. Zakiya, you want to take that, or Ted?
Ted, I'm pretty knowledgeable about it, but
go ahead. Please educate me.
ACE, again, ACE taught us that term, the Alternatives for Community and Environment, back in the 90s. They taught us to stop thinking that the environment was something. I mean, when I say us, I mean Roxbury residents and explicitly Black and brown people at that time. To stop thinking that the environment was to be left to the good doers over in the Sierra Club, that we too were part of the environment. And so they began to do mapping of brownfields, environmental dangers in the community that the EPA actually had to come in and help us deal with. And they taught us that there was environmental racism, because Black communities were more likely to be the siting of places like asphalt plants. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of them, where you dump trash transfer stations. And they showed us how to put up air quality testers all over the community. We found out that Black children had disproportionate rates of asthma. Mm-hmm. And teachers were pulling out their drawers of their desk drawers. They were filled with asthma pumps. And a little boy who was 14 years old died of asthma that year that I got involved. And we took over a park, sort of like Occupy Wall Street or whatever. And we occupied it and we renamed it Walters Park after him. That's on the neighborhood level. So Ted,
I would like to add to the white listeners that the pollution that starts in a Black or brown neighborhood then moves by the air and the wind and the water to other neighborhoods. So, the polluters put it in Black and brown neighborhoods, figuring the white people are not going to go up in arms, because they're not going to think about the fact that they get that pollution too. And that's why we're all in this together.
We all are connected, and we do have a call. So, listener, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. My name is Frank. I'm calling from Greenwich, Connecticut. And I wanted to point out that at one point in time, our town had a very incredibly dynamic recycling program for leaves.
Can you speak up a little? We're having trouble hearing you.
Oh, okay. our program in Greenwich, Connecticut for recycling leaves was a matter of creating three large mounds of recycling compost. And the compost that was created from the leaf pickup in the fall was actually sold to Miracle-Gro Company, I understand, and other companies for gardening soil. And then what happened is this town dump with this program had been there since the 70s, and a developer in the 80s built condominiums bordering up against that dump site, and they complained about the odor of the aroma of the leaf breakdown, and they won their case, and our town lost that program, and now we have to pay for leaf removal, where actually it was a self-sustaining and money-making operation established in our town. And that's one of the sad realities of some of these people that, you know, think they have the privilege of deciding what everybody else needs to do. So I just wanted to throw that out.
What a shame. That's...
We do have two more calls, so we need to keep it going. But thank you very much, listening
you, for your call.
Next call, please.
Hi.
Listen, you're on the air.
212-209-2877. You are on the air.
It's Rose from Flemington, New Jersey. One thing that's making me crazy about wind farms out in the ocean is that we have all these highways. Trucks and cars are running 24 hours a day. All we need to do is get a little bit of easement of the shoulders of these roads and put up our wind farms there, but not in the contemporary sense of use. Cage them up in chain link fence and hardware cloth and have concentric cone turbines and other types of turbines inside of this cage, and we don't have to have all the cable hookups from the ocean to the places. I mean, along the highways, there's a great need for light and electric generation for charging up your cars, and those who still need gas or diesel need to pump it.
It's an interesting suggestion. The windmills would have to be the kind of windmill they often call the egg beater type that doesn't have to find the wind, because a wind turbine has to be 50 feet higher than anything within 200 feet, or it spends all of its time changing direction as the wind changes direction and not making electricity. But egg beater types, doesn't matter what direction the wind comes from. So these are all aspects that have to be considered with that. Otherwise, it's a great suggestion.
And Ted, you had something to say about that?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I am very much in support of offshore wind. There's tremendous amounts of electricity that eventually will be generated in a clean way by wind farms off the coasts of the Atlantic Ocean in particular, possibly elsewhere too. So I just want to make clear that I think that offshore wind is an essential component of what we need in terms of shifting off of fossil fuels. Nobody wants to have a coal plant right next door to them spewing out all this pollution, or an oil refinery or a gas compressor station or pipeline. The way that we're not going to have those things being right next to so many people, particularly low-income people and people of color, is to shift to energy sources like wind, offshore and onshore, as well as solar, and as much as possible, very much community solar and community wind, as much as possible.
And the other thing is that a wind turbine out in the ocean is a lot better than a oil drilling rig out in the ocean, which, you know, can create massive damage if there's a spill.
And the anti-wind people like to say, oh, it kills birds. They don't care about birds any other time of the year or any other subject. And all you have to do is light them correctly. All right. If you light them with red, that could be deadly to a migrating bird at night. But if you light them with blinking blue or green, the birds simply fly around the wind turbines and it doesn't kill them. So it's really simple to do it right. Instead of doing it wrong, the FAA required red. They no longer do. It can be lit correctly.
So we're getting close, but we might have time for our third caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning to all, especially our guests from Boston. And
speak up.
One second, let me put it off speaker. Good morning. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's good.
Yes, well, thank you. This is Pastor Michael Vincent Crea, C-R-E-A. And the discussion is important, and it's necessary, yes, to have both and our youth, our elders, and everyone in between. Mm-hmm. My human rights ministry is One World Life Systems and ONE, One World Life Systems. And I've mm-hmm. done it for 32 years with facilitating basic necessities of life, which are human rights, that are self-determined rather than imposed. And one of the difficulties we have when you have to take 10 minutes to fundraise is that we need to hold ourselves accountable in getting out the knowledge and getting out the information in 21st century terms when others are already advanced before us. And I'll give the example. I'm a Peace Corps veteran. I've seen everything that your opening song talks about. I walked past a windmill that was pumping up water. I lived in a village that had delivery of their future at midnight like they did at noon, because in 1994, the midwives in a village with no running water or electricity.
Okay, 20 seconds. We're running out of time.
On the maternity where Ronald Reagan was taken off the solar panels that Jimmy Carter had put up.
We'd love to continue this conversation. It sounds very good, Pastor.
Ted, where is the faith-based hub meeting?
That will be somewhere between 53rd and 54th Street, I believe.
On Broadway on September 17th.
On Broadway. Yeah, people just come to Broadway. I think the main entry point is being projected as 56th Street and Broadway, although it could well end up going north of that if we have the kind of turnout that we absolutely need. I would really urge WBAI listeners to talk this up, speak to people. Zakiya, I believe, spoke earlier about the importance of speaking out and talking about things, and that's really true for this demonstration.
Okay, Zakiya, any last words?
Ted, for any elders or other people who may want to know, how long of a march is it?
It's a little over a mile, maybe a mile and a half from Broadway over to the United Nations.
I just got a text from one of my grandkids who is listening but didn't call, who said, speaking of being able to ask you what I want to know, can you walk that far?
Folks, it's time to wrap up. So thanks for joining us this morning. For more information, go to endfossilfuels.us and radicalelders.net. Also on ecoradio.org, that's ecoradio.org. We have information on a variety of environmental topics as well as an archive of our past shows.
We'd love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
Join us next Wednesday, September 6th at 10 a.m. To support Ecologic, you can choose from our many premiums at ecologic.wbai.org, including River That Harms. You can become a member, contribute monthly as an Ecologic BAI buddy. Call 212-209-2950. We'd love to see those Ecologic buddy pledges.
WBAI is community radio, and there are lots of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. You might have gotten a hint about that. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment, upkeep, rent. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We're always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. If you listen live, we may be able to take your call and answer your question. This show will be on WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes. Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Sally Gellert.
I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, September 6th at 10 a.m. You can always find us on the archives. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
Solar power. expensive energy source.
Give me the warm power of the sun. Give me the steady flow of water. Give me the spirit of living things as they return to play. Just give me the restless power of the will. Give me the comfort and flow of the world.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I think it's all right.
Hello, everyone. I'm Camilla Reese, and I'm running for a seat on WBAI's local station board. I'm running because I believe independent media is essential to democracy, and that radio dedicated to freedom of speech has a critical role to play in today's media landscape, not only in more broadly educating people compared to the mainstream media, but because independent radio allows us to truly hear each other's views so we can develop understanding and find common ground. WBAI is a New York City gem that deserves our support. I have untold number of great ideas for new programming, innovative fundraising, growing listenership, and ways to bring us closer together as a community. I'd love to put my business and financial skills, my creativity, and strong strategic acumen to work in support of WBAI's success. I hope you'll vote for me. This has been Camilla Reese running for a seat on WBAI's local station board.
I, Dion Powell, am running for local WBAI station board because I want to represent real diversity, equity, and inclusion on these platforms. A voice like mine from the Bronx, New York, gives a unique perspective on all the programming going forward, especially in this political climate. And I believe my opinions and my knowledge and resources could be a great attribute for people of color beyond, and, you know, educating people on civics, which is very important right now, and giving inputs to the board that I think will be very beneficial to the listeners and also in their organizations. So allowing me access to the board and what goes on behind the curtain of WBAI and to learn more, help me grow and also take back to my community. Thank you.
I'm Paul DiRienzo, candidate for a seat on the WBAI local station board. WBAI is facing a crisis, as usual. The crisis isn't the problem, but a long-standing failure of foresight and planning has become a network pandemic. Lurking in the shadows is a lack of vision and purpose. With only 5,000 members, down from 20,000 members just a generation ago, WBAI has no future without change. WBAI can add listeners without alienating legacy members by promoting crossover programming, shows appealing to more than one group. For example, the news. Bringing together old and young folks, ethnic groups of varied tastes in arts and music, relying on the people. WBAI can sail the rough political seas ahead by following the ideals stated in the original mission statement. WBAI has a crucial role and cannot continue as a club, clique, or outlet for one political view. We must fulfill our promise to New York and the world. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.
Hi. I am M.K. Williams, running as a listener candidate in the WBAI local station board election. I have been secretary of the LSB, the Finance Committee, and the Management Evaluation Committee. I am an experienced physician assistant with a master's in public health from Columbia. I aided refugees in Thailand and health workers in Nicaragua, among other things. I have been a loyal WBAI listener and member since the early 1970s, even keeping up my membership after moving back to Oklahoma to take care of aging parents. I want to do everything I can to preserve WBAI and Pacifica. Pacifica's mission to educate our way to world peace is unique in the world, and WBAI's dedication to free speech is unique among Pacifica stations. I chaired a listener group called the Free Speech Radio Alliance in the 1980s. Working together, we can save WBAI.
Hello, my name is Jack DePalma, and I'm a candidate for the WBAI LSB election, being run in 2023. I want WBAI to thrive, I want WBAI to increase in listenership, and I want WBAI to be able to pay its bills. It's important that we in New York City keep financial stability and financial security includes the fact that we pay our own bills within our means, and we increase our support amongst listeners,